Mysterious Circumstances is an American Crimecast production. Remember, everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Hey everybody, it's Justin with Mysterious Circumstances Podcast. Welcome to the episode. For those of you regular listeners today, I would like to apologize for being a week late on this episode. My work schedule has been pretty crazy here as of late. I do apologize. Thank you for hanging in there that extra week. But anyway, we got a good episode for you today. Tonight's case is about a man named Lorenzen Wright from Memphis, Tennessee. A little bit of background on Lorenzen Wright here. He died on July 19th, 2010, supposedly, which it's pretty much confirmed. Basically, he was shot 5 times in a secluded wooded area not far outside of Germantown, Tennessee, which is about 30 minutes east of Memphis. We'll get into a little bit more of those details later, but he was born on November 4th, 1975. He was raised primarily in Oxford, Mississippi. Oxford, Mississippi is actually only about an hour and a half, hour to 20 minutes, hour to 30 minutes south of Memphis. He actually played his high school, college, and some of his professional basketball there. Because see, folks, Lorenzen Wright is not just anybody. He is a very famous basketball player, and he is a pillar of Memphis, Tennessee. This guy was the real deal. He literally, when he hit it big, he brought everybody with him. He was an extremely talented basketball player in high school. About the age of 17, he actually met his wife, whose name was Shara. She was 22 at the time. He was 17. Let's, you know, be real about this, and this will, you know, you'll hear a lot more about her later. Let's be real, 22-year-old with a 17-year-old, he was going to be a huge success in the basketball world. Everybody knew it. So that might have had something to do with that relationship. Not saying it did, but, you know, just keep that in the back of your mind. He was selected 1996 in the NBA draft, 7th overall to the Los Angeles Clippers. All in all, he played 13 seasons in the NBA, which was about 778 games, not including playoffs. And he actually played, I think, 4 or 5 years of those NBA seasons in Memphis, where he actually attended college. I mean, this guy was Memphis. He was everywhere. Everybody loved this freaking guy. Right about towards the end of his career, you know, he knew his career was winding down. He, unfortunately, went through a lot of the struggles that a lot of very rich people have. I don't know how this happens, but he started running out of money. He was thinking about playing overseas. He was having houses foreclosed on. He was having cars repossessed. He was selling a lot of shit. Basically, he had blew through a shitload of money. He actually had 6 kids, technically 7. One of his daughters actually passed away from SIDS when she was very, very young. But all in all, he had 6 kids living with Shara. You know, he was in a little bit of financial trouble. Him and Shara were actually going through a divorce right about this time, right around 2008. He actually ends up moving to Atlanta, leaving his wife and 6 kids, which he would actually visit quite frequently. Like I said before, I can't stress this enough. Lorenzen Wright was not a bad guy. I mean, at the end of the day, maybe he did make some bad choices later on in his life, as we will get to here in the near future. But for the most part, he was a pretty decent dude. He, when he hit it big, his whole family and all his friends hit it big too. He employed a lot of his friends, just giving them jobs. He had a driver, one of them cooking for him, just everything. He brought everybody up with him. Which you can't hate a guy for that. That's pretty commendable, to be honest with you. With all that being said, this is a little bit of past, a little bit of personal knowledge about Lorenzen Wright. Just for the record, he was, just before the time of his death, 6'11" and about 225 to 230 pounds of fucking muscle, okay? The dude was not in bad shape whatsoever. So let's get to a little bit of facts about the case. Here's what we know On July 18th, 2010, Lorenzen Reich comes into town, which is Collierville, which is where his wife and six kids reside. He was actually in town for a baby shower, his sister's baby shower. I guess he decided to stop by, see his kids and his soon-to-be ex-wife. You know, it's totally understandable. Now, what happens next is strictly from his ex-wife's account. This is what Shara told police. On July 18th, 2010, between 10:30 and 10:45 p.m., Lorenzen Reich left her house. Now, she says that he was there with an unknown man who she did not know, and they were had actually started a bonfire in the bonfire pit in the backyard. She said she does not know why. She says that they had started that fire out back. Now, mind you, she does not give this statement until, I think, about 7 or 8 days after the fact. I think it was the day before his body was actually found, which was on the 28th of July. She actually gave this statement on the 27th. So just keep that in the back of your minds. She says that he is there and with an unknown male, and they're starting a fire in the bonfire pit in the backyard. She says that she doesn't know exactly what they're doing. She doesn't know who this gentleman is. But what she does say is that he has $110,000 cash, a track phone, and a box of drugs. And she said that when he left with this unknown individual, between 10:30 and 10:45 p.m., they drove away. She said she did not know what the car looked like, but she said that she could hear him talking over the track phone about flipping, basically taking the money and the drugs and making more money, depending on how you flip it. You know, we're not going to get into all that shit right now. But basically, he left the house, try to flip the drugs, try to buy some drugs, flip those later on. But he's leaving the house on her account with a track phone, $110,000 cash, and a box of drugs. Now, nothing is heard from Lorenzen, you know, till about 12:05 a.m. on July 19th, which is just a couple hours later. Now, basically what you hear is a 911 call. It was placed from his phone, not the track phone, his personal phone, to Germantown Dispatch, which is where he actually was at the time the call was placed. He was basically in Germantown. His ex-wife lived in Collierville. Collierville is about 20 minutes east of Germantown, Germantown being about half an hour east of Memphis. The call was placed from Germantown. Well, what happens is the call was never traced or reported for 9 days. Now, what you are going to hear is the recording of this 911 call.
Georgetown 911, where's your emergency? Hello? Hello?
All right, now what you heard right there was the 911 call from Lorenzen Reich to the Germantown PD, or the dispatcher. And like I said, this call was technically out of their jurisdiction, so they didn't bother tracing it. What really happened was they didn't alert any officers, any commanders, because they couldn't confirm it came from their jurisdiction. They did not send a patrol officer or even relay any information to the Memphis police until days later. Now, I'm pretty sure it was about 8 or 9 days later before they even acknowledged that this call had taken place, which is pretty damn sad in itself. And actually, Lorenzen Reich's family actually won a suit against the police department for that. Because when you hear gunfire and you're a fucking 911 dispatcher, you probably better do something about it. All right. Not trying to be an asshole, but, you know, call a spade here. After not responding to any of her text messages or returning any of her calls, Lorenzen Reich's mother filed a missing persons report on the 22nd. Now, mind you, his mother, whose name is Deborah Marion, I'm going to tell you guys right now, this lady is like the biggest badass in the world. She literally calls it how it is. I have the utmost respect for this woman. She She's like a lion when it comes to her kids. That is, it's amazing. She straight up told the cops she did not have a good feeling, and that when they found him, it was probably not going to be good. It was not like her son to ignore text messages or phone calls, for that matter, and not return them whatsoever. Now, keep in mind that his mother is the one placing this missing persons report, not the last person to see him alive, which was his soon-to-be ex-wife, or, you know, ex-wife at the time, Shira. Or Shara, whatever her name is. We'll say Shara. The 911 call is not reported. His mom goes ahead and files a missing persons report on July 22nd. Now, mind you, this is middle of July in Memphis, Tennessee. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the south of the United States, but it is fucking humid down there. It is really bad. So when his body is found on July 28th, due to apparently some kind of tip or something, I'm actually not even sure how anybody even checked to look this area, because his body, if I can find here in my little notes that I do have, his body was found in a place called Callis Cutoff. That's what it was, Callis Cutoff. Callis Cutoff is a small little wooded area just to the south of Germantown. Only locals actually know about this place, and actually Lorenzen Wright was very familiar with this place. He had taken that, he had walked through there several times, used it as a shortcut when he actually lived in the area. So this had to have been a place that he actually knew. I'm just getting to the point where it's probably safe to say that he was not taken there against his will. But his body was found on July 28th. He had suffered, from what they could see, 5 bullet wounds from 2 different caliber weapons. One being a small caliber, the other one being a medium caliber. I do not know the specific calibers. From what I could find, at the time his body was found, after rain, extreme heat, humidity, and unfortunately after the animals had gotten a hold of him, his body had actually decomposed to 57 pounds. This is a 6'11" man who 9 days earlier weighed 255 pounds. That's pretty extreme. His front bottom teeth were missing. The 2 teeth at the very front, the bottom, those were missing. He had several fractures on his rib cage. He had 1 bullet wound going through his left wrist. He had another bullet wound going through his left temple. The other 3 bullet wounds, one being in his head, I'm not sure of the location, and the other 2 being in his chest, I'm not sure about those exact location either. Reportedly, and I only saw this in one spot, the first officer on the scene was a man who, not as of late, would be a 28-year veteran of the police force. Was Dennis McNeil. Now, Dennis McNeil is going to come up later, so you're going to want to remember that name. Dennis McNeil is actually a family friend of the Wrights. He knew Lorenzen quite well, but there's little sketchy details about old Dennis McNeil, which, like I said, we will get to. When Lorenzen's body was found, it was obviously pretty bad. He could not have a open casket funeral because of the extreme nature of his body, and as far as I know, there's not any DNA evidence pulled from the body that would cause anybody to think twice about. Immediately, they go to question his ex-wife, and before that even happens, I mean, this freaking town, this city was up in arms, because he was like the prodigal son of Memphis. He had played high school, he had played college, and he had played NBA basketball there. He brought all his friends up and family with him. This guy was it. So when news hit, I mean, it was pretty devastating to the city. There were several memorials held. I mean, they gave the guy the utmost respect. Now, his ex-wife was one of the first questioned because, you know, obviously she was the last one to see him alive. Interesting fact, Shara apparently had lawyered up almost immediately, didn't give any reports to the police until probably about a week after his body was found. She lawyered up pretty much right out the gate. But she gave the account that I had told you about earlier. But a couple weird things that happened right about now is the neighbors of Sherrite, they report to the local news and the local newspapers that a couple of days after Lorenzen had disappeared, when he was actually still missing persons and not a confirmed homicide as of yet, she was seen in her backyard in the middle of a 95 degree day with an unknown male standing at the bonfire pit burning some shit. Now, what this stuff was, we do not know. Now, the police actually got a warrant, searched the house, didn't really find anything, but they did pull a couple metal bars out of that fire pit. What that actually ended up amounting to, I am not sure. Probably nothing, because I didn't hear anything else about it. Personality-wise, I have not heard very many good things about Shara. It is said that in 2003, Wendy Wilson says that Shara called her several times and threatened Lorenzen's life if she caught him cheating on her. What this basically amounts to is the guy is a millionaire 20, 30, 40 times over, hard telling. He is a superstar, he's famous, you know, she's pretty much figuring there's some infidelity in there. But basically in 2003 it is reported by Wendy Wilson, who would be Lorenzen's personal assistant from what she says, that Shara had actually called her several times, not just once, several times, and threatened Lorenzen's life if she had ever caught him cheating. I don't know where this all came from. I don't know what happened. Now, Wendy Wilson, his assistant, turned these recordings over to the police and nothing actually became of them. So that pretty much was a dead end in my research, you know, about the contents of those. And personality-wise, pretty safe to say that Shara is kind of cold-blooded. In an interview with Sports Illustrated, I believe this is where this interview came from, she is asked the question if she had anything to do with Lorenzen's murder.
Did you have any part in Lorenzen's murder?
I met first, I'm a wife, then I'm a mother, and then thirdly, I'm an author. The law enforcement should do what's best to find out who's the killer.
And you understand, obviously, why I had to ask that?
I do, but I'm a wife, a mother, and an author. I let people do what they're good at doing, and I'm just going to do what I'm good at doing. They need to spend time and focus and find out what happened to him. We all need to know.
Now, as you noticed, I have seen women dodge questions in my day, but that was some pro status shit, especially when she's trying to plug a fucking book that I can pretty much guarantee was not on the New York Times bestseller list. So, as you can see, she's a little bit shady at this point in time, but nothing really stands out that might be weird. Let's get into some facts here for a second. First fact is that Lorenzen Wright, about a month or so before he died, actually took out a $1 million life insurance policy, naming his ex-wife, Shara, the executor of his estate, at which he was making trusts for his kids. Now, why he would do this, I don't know. Maybe he knew some shit was going to go down. I'm not 100% sure. That is a very good theory on that, though. There's no other explanation for why a 34-year-old man who is in damn good shape would be, you know, getting a $1 million life insurance policy at this point in time in his life and setting up a trust for his kids and, of course, making her the executor of the estate. There's a nice little fact right there. Another one is that growing up in Memphis, which is in 2010 was actually the third most dangerous city in the U.S., that same year there were 89 murder victims, Lorenzen Wright being one of them. And it should be known that, you know, according to the FBI, I think it's a 64% solve rate for unsolved homicides. So You know, a lot of those murders went unsolved. So Memphis is a pretty rough city. There's a lot of people that came out of Memphis, and you know, Lorenzen Wright, he knew some, okay? So here's some facts for you. There's a man named Craig Pettis in Memphis, Tennessee. And for those of you who have never heard this name, I will be perfectly honest with you. I had never heard it before I started researching this episode. And I am honestly surprised that there is not a fucking movie made about this guy yet. He started off in a street gang in about 1995 and actually rose to build a drug empire. This guy was a fucking kingpin. And he actually had ties to Lorenzen. They were very, very loose ties. How those ties incorporate, we're going to get to here in a second. But we're going to talk about Craig for a second. Now, Craig caught his first rap, I believe, at the age of 15. He got caught with a sawed-off shotgun. That was his first offense. And by the age of 17, he was actually accused of attempted murder. And they wanted to try him as an adult. I'm not exactly sure how all that played out. But on April 4th, 2001, he was rearrested with some others in a house where cops had confiscated 600 pounds of marijuana. Now, for those of you on the metric system, I don't think I need to convert that for you because that's a shitload of weed, alright? I mean, he had those charges dropped as well by the state. He actually has a couple ties, at least one, in the Memphis Police Department. But this was not the police department that dropped these charges, it was the state. So, that's a little bit of a loose string right there. The following year, I believe it was in 2002, he actually caught another drug rap where a lot of cocaine and weed was involved. And I believe, while on bail, he fled the country. And from 2003 until about 2008, he was on the run living in Mexico. The reason he was living in Mexico was because Craig Pettis had ties to a very famous Mexican drug cartel down in Mexico, which shall remain unnamed because I don't want to get shot the fuck up. But he was the main connection for, I think, five of the surrounding states. Craig Pettis literally was a drug kingpin. His estimated worth was right around $1 billion when he was caught. Now, it is said that while Craig Pettis was in Mexico, he was trying to tie up loose ends and actually ordering hits. Now, in 2008, Mexican authorities and the United States Marshals went and got Craig Pettis and arrested him, and he was then extradited back to Memphis. And in 2009, he pleaded guilty to 19 counts. Those 19 counts included literally all kinds of shit. Conspiracy, racketeering, conspiracy to commit murder. He actually pled guilty to all 19 counts, like I said, and admitted to 4 murders. And these were not just regular murders. These people were suspected snitches and or informants, and they were tortured before they were killed. Now, he didn't just kill those people. He killed pretty much anybody. He did anything he could to protect his well-being. In 2013, he was found guilty and is currently serving 9 life sentences. And he pretty much owns it. They were trying to pressure him to give up his cartel connections, and they offered to put his family in witness protection and change his name while he was in prison. And he pretty much just laughed and said, and I quote, "Doesn't matter where you put me, they will find me." So that's the seriousness of his situation right there. Now, where Craig Pettis comes into play is there's a man by the name of Bobby Cole. Now, Bobby Cole is a person who works for Craig Pettis. He was a drug dealer who actually got an 8-year rap. Well, how he comes into play is in 2008, Lorenzen Wright actually sold Bobby Cole 2 vehicles. He sold him a 2008 Mercedes-Benz and a 2007 Cadillac Escalade. The reason we know this is because 2008 Lorenzen Wright was investigated because Bobby Cole got caught with a shitload of drugs in these vehicles. or at least one of them. I'm not 100% sure on that. Well, given that Lorenzen Wright had sold him the cars, and the cars were still in Lorenzen Wright's name, which, if you're a drug dealer, you don't want to put shit in your name. You want it in anybody else's name that you can, because, well, do your research. It's the smart thing to do. But where this all comes into play is Bobby Cole gets arrested. He gets pressured. The cars are under Lorenzen Wright's name. I'm not exactly sure what happened with all the court stuff, but nothing happens to Lorenzen Wright. He is pretty much excused, and that was the last you heard of it. Bobby Cole ended up getting, I believe, 8 years in a federal prison, and that's how all that played out. Now, who Bobby Cole is very interesting, because if you remember me telling you about the police officer, Dennis McNeil. Dennis McNeil was supposedly the first one to arrive at the scene when they found Lorenzen Wright's body. Now, at the time, Dennis McNeil was a detective in the narcotics division. But Dennis McNeil is also Bobby Cole's brother-in-law. He married Bobby Cole's sister, I believe. So this is his brother-in-law, a narcotics detective, just happened to be first one on the scene, and is also friends with Lorenzen Wright. That right there is a pretty interesting little fact, because if you're going to commit a murder and not get caught, you probably want a cop on your side. You know, he's never really been discussed, which is a fucking shame, because I think that would be really interesting to sit down with that guy. You know, I can understand one coincidence, but the fact that there's two or three right about there just doesn't sit right with me. Something's not right about that. But with that being said, we have Craig Pettis, who we mentioned, drug kingpin. We got Dennis McNeil, who's in on the mix too, who is a cop. So, with all this budding knowledge of what's going on, how about we jump into the theory section? Now, obviously, the most popular theory is that Craig Pettis was cleaning up loose ends and had Lorenzen Wright murdered because possibly of his connection to Bobby Cole, and that would sink his ship even deeper. But me personally, I really don't believe that. Some of the reasons I don't believe this is because any kind of smart drug dealer will tell you, one, you never do a huge deal like that in a secluded area. You always do it in a huge public place in a very discreet way. And this is why, because when Lorenzen Wright left his house, he was with somebody that he knew. And I have no fucking doubt in my mind that Shara knows exactly who this person is, because her personality type is not the type of person that is not going to be all up in his fucking business, alright? You can tell that by listening to interviews with this woman. You know, another little point to that is probably the fact that Craig Pettis was fucked at this point in time. He pled guilty, he knew he was getting life sentences. I don't really think he would go to the trouble of all this. I really don't see it. It just does not make sense to me. He pretty much knew he was fucked. He's going to prison for the rest of his life. He admitted to 4 murders. He admitted to being a fucking huge drug kingpin. Which, like I said, the guy knew he was screwed. I don't think he's going to go out of his way to fucking do this. That and the connections there were too loose. Craig and Lorenzen, from what I understand, the research I did, didn't actually really know each other. I think they were just loosely intertwined through various people. I really don't see that happening. Another very good theory is Shara Wright had her husband killed for the insurance money. And the reason that this theory is actually extremely popular is because the life insurance policy that Lorenzen Wright had made, I believe it was like a month or two before he died, was for $1 million. Cheryl Wright had 6 kids with this man, and there is no doubt in my mind that she loved money. She latched onto him when he was 17 years old. Everybody knew where he was going. She was 22. She was on that shit. You know, I hate saying it like that. You know, it's a real asshole way to say it, but that's just the way it looks. Because within 10 months of her claiming that $1 million, it was fucking gone. It was to the point where Lorenzen's parents actually drug her into court to make sure that she was using the money the way that it was set up, was for the kids. She had $350,000 in renovations done to a house. She bought another house. She bought a couple luxury vehicles. She took a very nice trip to New York. Basically splurged the money on a lot of frivolous things. So that's kind of an indicator of, I suppose, that the kind of person that she appears to be. Now, I can't say that for sure because I don't fucking know her. But, you know, if I was a betting man, which I am, I would say that she liked money and she liked spending money. Now, the reason I like this Cheryl Wright theory, again, is because the neighbors not only reported a bonfire with an unknown subject a couple of days after his disappearance. This was before his body was found on a 95 degree afternoon in Memphis, Tennessee. Well, outside of Memphis, but you catch my drift. But because her neighbors actually reported hearing her screaming on the phone a couple days later, it was right around that same day, about how she wanted her fucking money, yelling on the phone to an unknown individual. Now, there's a lot of reasons this bothers me, too. Was because, if this was the case, why wouldn't the Memphis PD look into this? Now, Dennis McNeil, being a homicide detective at the time, would probably be one of the ones on this case. And actually a very good friend of his, by the last name, I believe, of Green, who was also on the force, actually got busted selling drugs for Pettus and got a lengthy prison term. I'm not exactly sure how that ended out, but I don't think he directly plays into this theory, so I kind of really didn't research the guy too much. That might be my bad, that might not. But what I'm thinking is, Cheryl Wright wanted some fucking money. I think she was extremely raging pissed because at this point in time, Lorenzen had a girlfriend, a pretty hot young thing from my understanding. I think she was raging pissed about this. I think she pretty much set him the fuck up. That is my personal opinion. There's just too many things. I mean, she's just cold-blooded. I mean, she never reported him missing. His mother did it. I mean, I'm sure she was used to him being gone. But the way this guy talked about his kids, he was a fucking phenomenal father. All right? This guy always is talking about his kids. So I couldn't see him going a couple days without talking to at least one of them. And why she wouldn't think this was weird? You know, hard telling. Why would she lawyer up so quick? When he was still missing and his body was not even found, she was fucking lawyered up. There's something wrong with that right there. Now all of a sudden she's a fucking author. She wrote a book loosely based on her relationship with Lorenzen. It's about abused women and all this other shit. And I'm not saying abused women are shit. You know, anybody who raises their hand to a woman's a fucking pussy, okay? But flat out now, don't sit there in an interview about your ex-husband's death and try to plug a fucking book. Because you're not an author, okay? You're trying to make a buck or two. And that's pretty much how it went. I think her and, at the end of the day, Dennis McNeil were somehow involved. And if I'm wrong, how can you prove it? Well, the Memphis PD could possibly track her phone records. If she was on the phone screaming about money at a certain time in the middle of this day, they can check to see who she's talking to. Second of all, check Dennis McNeil's bank records from about that time. Were there any large sums of money deposited? You know, if there was, if there wasn't, it's hard telling because he probably got paid in cash. I think that it was a friend of his. I think it was somebody close to him. Just because he was out in a discreet area, I think he was trying to make some easy money to probably appease his ex-wife. And I think he was pretty much set up by her and one, if not two, of his friends. Which is very, very sad. You know, that might come in you know, with the Mexican drug cartel theory. You know, he thought he was going to make some quick money with some of Bobby Cole's connections, which would be, you know, loosely related to the Dennis McNeil connections, Craig Pettis connections, and they maybe they shot him out of, you know, just the fact he was famous, whatever it might have been. You know, they just wanted to double up, grab the money and the drugs, take off. But I honestly think it was a little bit more personal than that. I think Sherwright definitely had something to do with it. As for my theories, that's pretty much all I got for you. Feel free to analyze that data yourself. Look into it a little more. If there's something you know that I don't, feel free to email me. I would like to thank the anonymous listener for actually suggesting this case. I have kept in contact, and it's a very interesting case right here, and I'm very glad it was suggested. So thank you, Anonymous. I appreciate the suggestion. I hope to see all of you next week when we will have the very first listener co-hosted episode on here. No pressure, Ellie. We will be covering the Maud Crawford case. So with all that being said, I hope you guys enjoyed the episode, and I will see you on the flip side.